Hey there, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're digging into Martin Amis's novel. Sophie, I have to ask, what was your first reaction when you finished this one?
Hi there, Sam. Honestly, I felt kind of sick, but also weirdly impressed. This is not an easy book, but it's a really important one. It's about the Holocaust, but it's not set in the gas chambers. It's set in the domestic lives of the people running the camp.
Right. The zone of interest is actually the official SS term for the 40 square kilometers around Auschwitz. It's this buffer zone with farms and housing for the personnel. And Amis shows us that world through three very different narrators.
Three deeply unreliable narrators. And each one represents a different kind of complicity. There's Angelus Thompson, a handsome SS officer who's basically a cynical womanizer. He sees the camp as a social scene, a place for parties and affairs.
He's obsessed with seducing the commandant's wife, Hannah Dahl. And that's the main plot, this love affair that happens while people are being murdered just over the fence. What got me is that Thompson isn't a fanatical Nazi. He's just a careerist. He's bored by the whole genocide thing.
Exactly. He's Hannah Arendt's banality of evil personified. The horror is just background noise to him. Then you have Paul Dahl, the commandant himself. He's the opposite of Thompson in some ways. He's petty, insecure, a violent alcoholic. But he sees himself as a hardworking family man.
His diary entries are nauseating. He talks about units being processed and special treatment, all these euphemisms. And he's worried about the smell from the crematoria offending visiting dignitaries. He's totally deluded about his own cruelty.
Then there's the third narrator, Small. He's a Jewish prisoner forced to work in the Sonderkommando, the groups that herded people into the gas chambers and hauled out the bodies. His section is the moral heart of the book.
And it's the hardest to read, not because of graphic violence, though there is some, but because of the psychological torture. He's forced to participate in the murder of his own people just to survive another few weeks. He knows he's a dead man walking.
Small is the reality that Thompson and Dahl work so hard to ignore. His presence in the novel is crucial because he shows what the system actually does to human beings. He's a witness from inside the abyss.
The whole novel is built on this contrast between the ordinary and the monstrous. The Dahl family home has a garden, a piano, and nanny. But the garden is fertilized with human ash. The children play with toys made in the camp workshops.
That's the real terror of the book. Evil isn't some demonic force, it's normalized. It becomes part of the daily routine. The characters gossip, have affairs, worry about their careers, and plan dinner parties while a factory of death runs next door.
Amis uses dark, scathing irony to expose the absurdity of a Nazi worldview. There's this black humor that's shocking but necessary. Like, Thompson mocks the regime's pretensions while being totally blind to what's happening.
The triviality is the point. The evil comes from a million small decisions, a thousand acts of willful ignorance. It's a failure of imagination and empathy. Amis is arguing that the capacity for this kind of evil is a permanent possibility in the human heart.
And the love affair between Thompson and Hannah Dahl. It's a form of resistance, but also deeply compromised. They can only have their romance because the camp gives them the leisure and total control over life and death. It's a beautiful flower growing on the edge of a volcano.
The climax brings all three threads together. Dahl's jealousy explodes. Small's plan for revolt reaches its tragic end. The love affair shatters. But the system keeps going. The machinery of death grinds on. There's no redemption.
The final pages show the memory of the Holocaust already being distorted and forgotten. The zone of interest gets renamed and paved over. That's the chilling part. We're still capable of creating our own zones of interest today.
The one thing I'm taking away is that the most dangerous place isn't a gas chamber. It's the ordinary, comfortable, self-deceived mind of someone who's stopped asking questions. That's the real zone of interest.
I'd add that the book made me think about how easy it is to compartmentalize. To love your family, and ignore the suffering you're causing. That's the warning Amos is giving us.
If you want to go deeper, the whole library is over on 7minutebooks.com/app with over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It starts at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 once for lifetime access.
So the zone of interest isn't a place on a map. It's a state of mind we're all capable of inhabiting. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.
Take care.